Sonic and Knuckles.
I know, I think it is. What's like going on, everybody? Welcome to the BGA DFS Strategy Show, where hopefully we'll be rostering more Sonics than Knuckles this week. Or are they teammates? No, they're the ones that go against each other. Anyways, Ben was just commenting that our lead-in music here kind of sounded like the old Sega Genesis game, and that was a movie or something like that, Ben. Anyways, we're not going to give our movie reviews on Sonic the Hedgehog. In fact, we are going to give you our best picks and strategy for the American Express this week. Our first stateside full event of the year, but it doesn't come, Ben, without some oddities to it. Why don't you tell our fans here the glorious thing about this event? Or I say that with just a tidbit of sarcasm.
Yeah, so we do get to the mainland, which is nice, but this is one of the early season golf tournaments that's very unique. So there's a couple of different things. You got the pro-am nature. You've got the three-course rotation, which is what I think you're alluding to the most, which triggers a 54-hole cut. So there's just a lot of variables that we just don't see in a normal week. Everyone has to deal with it. Some guys probably deal with it better than others. But the three courses is what always gets me. You know, you get two, obviously, on the stadium. But other than that, it's a little weird having your guy play different courses at different days.
It is. And there obviously is maybe a little bit of a strategy component to it where you're able to take more risks because you're guaranteed three rounds from your golfer. I recall last year, a guy that had 5 of 6 make the cut ended up taking down the $200 or the $500. I don't know exactly which one, but one of the two. And it didn't surprise any of us because of the way that the lineup built out. The guy that missed the cut ended up scoring 82 points. So he ended up scoring way above the average and only played three rounds. So certainly that element to it. Before we dive into some players here, we're going to give some Hawaii takeaways and also tell you about the sponsor of our show, Yahoo. We have partnered with Yahoo Fantasy this season to bring you an offer that is almost too good to be true. Thanks to the partnership with them, we have exclusive deal that gets you a free month of Osmo Plus Platinum. And right now, in my opinion, there is no better time to join Osmo Plus Platinum. You've got the NFL playoffs. You've got NBA in full swing. You've got NHL, 100K to first tonight. Is that what I saw, Ben? Pretty sure on the DFS street. Of course, you got PGA just really getting started. I mean, we've got the American Express this week, but next week we're going down to San Diego for the Farmers, a fantastic field and big DFS prizes. So come on and join us, and a great way to get that free month. So that's right. You heard that right. Free month. To qualify, you need to be new to Yahoo. Sign up for the account via the link in the video description right below us. Deposit and play. That's it. Afterwards, Yahoo will send us your name after you play in your first paid contest and we'll reach out via email with a coupon. If you need immediate access, like you're trying to play in that 100K today and you've signed up, make sure you email support@osmo.com and they will get you all squared away. So Ben, let's just give a couple of Hawaii takeaways that I saw, wanted to bring up with you. We've already gone over the format. We'll go over PGA West after. So mid 8K chalk. Been killing it the first 2 weeks. Russell Henley, 30% owned roughly last week, coming in second, should have won. And the week before, Cam Smith, highest owned golfer on the slate, wins. So is this a trend that, if continues, will bankrupt me? Yes, definitely. But how long can we suggest that this trend is going to continue?
Yeah, so it's early. I don't want to overreact, but certainly right now it has been a trend. And of course, listen, when guys are really popular, it's people aren't stupid. The tools that we provide and everyone provides in the industry are very, very solid, and they identify these guys. It's just a high variance sport. You're not going to see that week in and week out. And I was able to actually survive last week and thrive despite a chalk guy hitting to that extent. And I had some Henley, but I'm trying not to read too much in it. These are deep fields. There's a lot of guys. Just so far, though, I mean, your point is well taken. We've had two very, very obvious chalk guy smash. Henley blew it, but he was still, of course, a very important piece to any lineup last week.
Yeah, he for sure was. Now let's talk about the winner, Decky. This guy, when he gets in front of favorable fans that are obviously pulling for him, they were clearly pulling for him to Sony, a ton of Japanese influence there on the islands. He wins the Zozo. I mean, there's something to that. The best players in the world say, hey, look, when the fans get behind us, we elevate our games. Matsuyama's got to be on the top of that list, Ben. Obviously, his putting last week is what won him the tournament, but no doubt about it. When the fans started pulling for him down the stretch, he turned it up. Yeah, that drive on 18 that he made. I mean, a lot of signs. Obviously, the second shot in the playoff as well.
When he gets going, there's no doubt about it. And I'm sure some of that is a catalyst with the environment that he's in. The putter, I think we all know when Decky putts, that's the result more often than not as he's in the hunt. But it was, again, it's 2 weeks in Hawaii. I don't take a ton out of it. You had some big players get some reps. You had some other guys kind of shake the rust off. And now we start to get into the thick of it. Obviously, on a personal level, I was really happy to see Seamus continue to play well. I really liked him last week. He's just playing really, really good. And I think we're seeing, there's a group of guys looking to take that next step. Not everyone is Hovland level expectations, but there's a lot of those guys. And it's going to be interesting to see who does it. And then maybe some guys who regress this year.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's quickly just run through the format. And we've already done that. Run through PGA West even quicker here for the breakdown. The three courses, it's PGA West, two of them there. The Stadium Course, which has one of the rounds in the Sunday round. The Nicklaus Course in La Quinta. In years past, La Quinta has been the easiest. If you're looking at last year's event, they canceled the Pro-Am, so they just used two courses. A lot of weird stuff going on. Bottom line, small greens at PGA West. Still going to hit a ton of them in regulation, 75%. Driving accuracy's down, but Ben, with overseed everywhere, I mean, it's pretty easy to hit out of this rough.
Yeah, I think that's well said. It's a little weird, but there are some, at least the one good thing, I guess, some of the similarities, from these courses can kind of overshadow all three of them. So like, I do think obviously when you get two rounds at one of them, you're going to look to that, but it's not radically different. I don't think it's going to play hard. And we've seen time and time again, and you can speak to this more than me, the pin locations are pretty advantageous because of the element with having not professionals out there with you. They're not going to give these guys ridiculous locations. And that helps, I think, the ability to get up and down and also just to flag hunt.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Listen, if you put PGA Tour pin locations against amateurs, we're talking 7-hour rounds, not the 5.5 that they're going to be this week. Okay, let's just quickly run through some trends. I didn't see many I liked this week versus last week. You and I kind of agreed on a couple of them that were obvious, not like we made them up or anything. But here are the ones that I came up with this week that I liked. Looks like at least 11 of the previous 15 or so winners here have played in at least two American Express Championships. Is that just more not a lot of first-time winners happen here because it's so early in the season? A lot of these guys are still trying to get their footing. I feel like that's probably the case. That's kind of where I lean to it.
Yeah, I'd say so. The only other element to it, I do think it doesn't have to be here. There's a couple of them. But I would prefer my guy having had played in some of these pro-am events because it is different. It's really slow. It's a different type of atmosphere. And I'm not sure that it's hard to quantify. It's probably impossible to quantify, but I think there is something to maybe having experienced this a couple of times, not just the courses, but the entire a 3-day cut, all those things. It would help if my guy played it at least once.
Not only have they played once, but most of them have at least a top 30 here as well. Okay, last one, form seems to matter here. Oh, but the last 15 winners, at least 12 of them have a top 25 in the fall or Hawaii. So again, I don't think that's, if we look at that, that's probably going to be the case in most weeks, right, Ben? We don't have that many winners that come out of nowhere to do it.
Yeah, that's not surprising, obviously. The better players make these trends possible. And when you bring guys, we've got some pretty good players here at the top. The depth is an issue, and we'll dive into the top of the board soon. But I'm not surprised to see a stat like that. And I'm not surprised, anywhere you go, if you're bringing big time names who have played the event before, you're going to see some of these trends develop.
For sure. All right, let's talk about some of those best players on the board. Instantly, when pricing came out, I put out a tweet. I stand by it. John Rahm and Patrick Cantlay are $1,000 underpriced on DraftKings this week. The fact that they have basically the same price as Cam Smith and, say, Hideki Matsuyama of last week, I think that's pretty poor by DraftKings, in my opinion. The fact that they're 5-1 and 8-1 to win the tournament, Rahm should be 12K, Cantlay should be 11-6. Then maybe Scheffler should still be 10-2 or 10-6. Ben, what do you make of the salaries? Are you in my camp thinking they are quite a good value this week.
Yeah, I think this speaks to kind of, and I don't know the intricacies of the algorithm, but like, it seems like they almost have slots where they just fill in based on the talent. And sometimes not all fields are created equal. And to me, that Rahm and Cantlay, they're so far ahead of some of these other guys, but they still are priced kind of in that, you know, binary incremental. That's where the hard K 12K ceiling on DraftKings gets into play. And over on like Yahoo, Rahm is 51, Cantlay's 47, Sungjae's also 47. So it's a little closer. But to me, these are two guys, I mean, what's there to say? They're the favorites for the reason. I'm with you. I'm interested to see how many people play both. You go sub 7K for the other four and you can do it.
Yeah, yep, 69.50, I think, is the average salary. I've clicked around a couple of times there. We'll go over a little bit of strategy that I'm going to be using for the two of them in a couple of minutes here in our strategy section, trying to keep up with chat. And I look over, and the one thing I connect with is some either you or I have serial killer eyes. I don't know.
Tough scenes here. What can you do?
Tough scenes. Probably, man. I'm surprised I haven't gotten any hair comments yet. Typically, when my hair gets this long, I get made fun of quite a bit. But it looks like the picture from Greg Ehrenberg there from high school has taken the realm of good hair. So I get to get a pass on that for now. A couple of other guys I do want to talk about. Because of the underpricing of Rahm and Cantlay, I feel like Scottie Scheffler and Tony Finau maybe are looking a little overpriced when you compare them to the two best players maybe in the world right now. I mean, listen, Cantlay's not ranked number two in the world, but over the last 6 months, is there anybody else that you'd want in your lineup besides Rahm than Cantlay? I think at this point, they'd be very close to 1-2 or 1-2-3, somewhere in that range. I can't see myself clicking Scottie Scheffler or Tony Finau at all this week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm very interested to see what our tools register. It's only Tuesday, and we're going to obviously see these things mature ownership-wise and things like that. Obviously, Finau and Scheffler are still world-class players, but I do think they're overpriced relative to what we're seeing. I mean, even take the betting odds. Let's look at that for a second. You've got Rahm, and you talked about this already a little bit. You've got Rahm and Cantlay sub 10 to 1. Then everybody else is north of 20 to 1. Like, there is a big gap, and I don't think the pricing identifies that. Oh, nice. I don't have – that's right, my man, my dude. I don't have serial killer eyes, apparently.
Yes. I don't know. What do you want from me?
It's on you. What can I say? I brought the Sonic and Knuckles to the – and Tails, by the way.
Tails is the partner. Knuckles is the bad guy. Yes, I got it right.
Yeah. Knuckles is the Echidna. He's red. It's all up here. I think that for me, ownership is going to tell the tale with those guys. You know, they're good enough to win anytime they teed up, but there's no doubt their price leaves a lot to be desired.
Baz, our buddy in chat, wants to know if they've played AT&T. That's basically the same setup. You would consider that experience, right?
Yes, regard. Absolutely. Just anything like that.
All right, let's talk about a couple of other guys in this range. Where I felt a little bit more comfortable building is taking Rahm or Cantlay, splitting them. Also, I had a question from Mike Campbell while I talk about Rahm and Cantlay. What's the ownership difference? We have it projected as 0% difference right now, both at 31% as they should be trending higher. I felt more comfortable matching them up with somebody in the low nines. Sungjae Im, I'm very confused about, so I'll just stay away and let him beat me at 9,900. Taylor Gooch goes out and complains, I guess, about Kevin Na in the slow play last week. Here's my take on slow play. I understand Gooch may be one of the fastest players on the PGA Tour. I totally get that. And I can see how it would impact his mentality. But if he's got a good caddy and he's been doing this for 28 years, the dude should be able to deal with it for 18, 36, or 54 holes, which he did last week. I don't think it impacted his play. This week, he's going to have to play much longer rounds. So if it impacted his play last week, you've got to think it will this week, right?
I mean, again, that's where I think having some experience in this environment would help, because you better be prepared for stuff like that. And if you're not, that's going to be to your detriment. So I have no opinion on slow play. I generally come on the opposite side of anything that Grayson Murray says. So that's my biggest catalyst. But at the same time, I would hope that Gooch will be prepared for this, because he's playing very well. He's an extremely talented player. He's gaining across the board. Him and Seamus's prices are really getting up there, though. They're both north of Corey Connors and Wolf and Anser, guys that I would consider probably better players than them at this point.
Yeah, and for comparison, this is exactly what I meant to bring up. I didn't source it. Spaz did it for me. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. He was 12-1 in Napa. John Rahm was for the price. $800 difference here this week makes a huge, huge difference. So I'll have a ton of Rahm. I'll have a ton of Cantlay. In fact, at this point, I can't see myself making a lineup without one of them in it, just given how their projection is to win the tournament. Also, one last note. If you go to our PGA DFS projections and you look at our top values, it is very, very seldom that the top salary player on the board gets anywhere in the top 10. John Rahm is there this week. So it just goes to show you how a difference the salary can make. A couple of guys that I would like to pair with them, though, Ben Matwolf. Let's talk about him for a minute. This guy looks like he's back. Now, we know that golf is a mental game as much as it is skill. You and I both have said Matwolf has beyond enough skill to compete at this level and be very good. Mentally, he struggled last year. Looks like he's back, though. Four straight top 20s in the fall. A second place finish at a course which we didn't think was really well suited for him. So all systems go. I love pairing Matt Wolf up with the two top guys this week.
Yeah, I mean, Wolf is the guy I think you just have to understand. There's going to be weeks where for seemingly no rhyme or reason, he just doesn't have it. And it's going to look bad. But when he does have it, I mean, the guy is a super talent. And the interesting thing, during the swing season, it was actually his around the green and putting that really, really propped him up. It wasn't elite driving. It wasn't elite iron play, which at the height of his powers in like 2020 during that run, he was just destroying tee to green. So this guy just, he can do it all. When he puts it together, he wins. When something leaks, it leaks really bad. That's always perpetual tournament value. I think he's always in play in the betting markets as well. So a lot of positives with Wolf, $41 on Yahoo as well. I think that's a pretty reasonable tag.
Absolutely love that call over there. I think he's a real quality player. And when he's got it all there, he's maybe one of the best players in the world. Abe Answer. We'll talk about Answer first, then we'll go to Connors. Answer was 7-under heading on the back nine, playing well, 4-under for the day. And he makes bogey, and he makes another bogey, he makes another bogey. And it's like, dude, what are you doing? Do you not want to play the weekend? Do you just want to go home? I'm going to say yes to that because it certainly looked like it. All of a sudden, everything just ended. It was an abysmal miscut, but the ball striking looked okay. It was just the putter, really. So do you want to go back to Answer in a bounce back spot, maybe less than 10% ownership, back-to-back top fives here?
I do. We're going to talk about him again in the one and done segment later in this show as well. I think that answers the type of guy you could buy here. He's lost 2.5 strokes or more in both tournaments to start 2022. So what can you really expect? The ball striking was fine at Sony. It was a terrible miscut, but he's the type of guy, not all miscuts are created equal. He should have made the cut. And if he did make the cut, where would the perception be if he had a strong weekend and he came in the top 20 or something like that? I think there'd be a lot more.
It'd be 20% probably.
That's what I'm saying. And I think that 92 in this field for a guy whose game is not, I don't see anything mega alarming. I can get on board with that.
Let's match that up with Russell Henley, who, you know, obviously put a ton of mental fortitude and strength into last week, ended up not getting it done. So would you rather play Answer off a missed cut, but stats looked okay versus Henley, who's coming in off of, you know, another should have won event?
So it's tough. Henley's irons are incredibly good. They're up there with the best in any field. He paired that with 6 strokes gained putting. He did everything possible but win. But the manner in which he lost, I don't care who you are, that's got to affect you a little bit. Now, maybe he just comes out, and if he keeps that going, he's going to be paying off his salary for a long time. So I'm not writing him off, but I would rather play Answer, who to me is in a more buy low spot, than play Henley, who's kind of on the rise price wise. And he was very impressive last week. I just don't know if he can continue that.
I'm smiling because our buddy Tokyo TS in the chat says that Answer is a 7K range golfer. Ooh, that is a bold take. Definitely going against how you and I feel this week for sure. That would mean that he outperformed his strokes gained baseline last year by quite a bit. Could be absolutely accurate.
That could be true.
Yeah, certainly we will see about that. Cody Connors, we didn't spend time on. And then the lowest owned golfer projected in this range, doesn't have a top 10 since the FedEx St. Jude, but it is Will Zalatoris. So Corey Connors, Will Zalatoris, kind of two ends. Connors looks elite in the ball striking. Zalatoris is kind of tailed off of that top end. So what do you land on these two?
Yeah, I mean, Connors, again, elite ball striking. He was good with the putter at Sony. He obviously likes that place. Now he comes here. I'm kind of indifferent to him. I think if I land there, so be it. He hasn't had, it's only a small sample. It's not the end all be all. He hasn't had any success at this event whatsoever. So something to keep an eye on. I don't think I'm going to get to Will Z. It's more just opportunity cost. He's a fine player. I'm just not sure where he's at. He had a pretty rough stretch to close 2021. Now maybe he refreshed and hit the reset and comes back, but I'll be waiting and seeing.
Yeah, this is definitely a little bit of a wait and see approach. There's just two guys in this field that I'm taking that with. Zalatoris is one, and I know I'm going down the board a little bit, but Cameron Champ is the other. Guy has a back injury. Oh, no, sorry, wrist injury. I did look that up. Then gets COVID for the second time. Can't play in the Tournament of Champions. Don't know where his game is. Wait and see for me for both Zalatoris and Champ. So, okay, so let's move on to the value section here. But before I do, I want to tell you guys a little bit about our PGA packages that we have here. You can get access to all the great Osmo Plus tools and content for nearly every DFS sport out there with an Osmo Plus weekly pass. It's going to start at $29.95. This includes full access to all the premium content and tools that we have at Osmo.com, including player projections, ownership projections that Ben and I mentioned quite a bit, our premium Discord channel, lineup builder, and much more. Of course, if you're a new user of Osmo Plus Platinum, then you can take advantage of the PGA Strategy Show, all caps, one word, promo code that'll get you 25% off your first week. Of course, you can start by joining us on the PGA Weekly Express Package. That's going to start at $3.95. So plenty of packages for everybody. Start guessing. Stop guessing. Start winning. Join Osmo Plus today. If you take some approaches that I did for this fantasy gauntlet, fantasy ball thing and guesses, maybe it ends up being that. We want to remove that and start winning. So join us today. At one point last night, I meant to bring up earlier, I saw Alex was in first and second in the Millionaire Maker at one point last night. Didn't end that way, but it was funny to see that after his big Millionaire Maker win a couple of weeks ago. All right, let's talk about some values on the board. I don't think you can get many 9K guys together if you're playing the guys up top, obviously. So this guy's going to be important. And only two golfers, basically in the rest of the field, Ben, are projected over 10%. That's crazy to me how much ownership is going to the top of the board this week, but it goes to show you the starts and scrubs approach that is going to be kind of taken. So in this 8K range, I want to have you get first crack. Where are you leaning toward with your shares? It's certainly not nearly as powerful as last week's.
No, it's definitely not. But on the flip side, I think it's, if you get it right, you're going to get paid off in a big way here. So Patrick Reed's off the tee game is absolutely broken, but his price point is getting to one where in fields like this, I'm going to be willing to live with that. He's gotten some reps in 2022. They weren't great. His putter was, as usual, carrying him, but sub nine here, I'll go to Reed to get things started. You've got Reed and Bez, even Justin Rose. These are the type of guys with the putter specifically, they can lean on it and get it done. Whereas some of these other guys obviously are more well-rounded players at this point, but I have interest in Reed right at off the top.
Me too. He had that scare with double pneumonia. I'm not going to lie to you, but in my value video that I put out here on the Osmo YouTube channel, he was the top guy for me. I mean, just looking at the other guys priced above him, one would think Patrick Reed should maybe be in the 10,000 range, or at least based off of the history, and not somebody like, you know, Scottie Scheffler, Tony Finau. We've seen Reed priced above those guys many times. So he was the first name that I saw. I found it much easier to pair him with Cantlay, obviously, than I did Rahm. The $400 meant $200 per golfer down below, and it does matter this week. I think that there are a lot of better golfers at 71, 72 than there are at 69 and 68. So it mattered in that regard. A couple of other guys in this 8K range that I am going to focus on. You mentioned Justin Rose and Poseidon. I don't mind those guys. I'd rather go down below. Alex Noren, when you pair him up to Patrick Reed, they kind of seem similar, but Noren went through a Jordan Spieth like fall down the official world golf rankings. So don't mind Noren, but if they're going to be similar ownerships, I would much rather go to Reed. What do you make of Siwoo Kim? Irons got better last week, but still losing strokes.
Yeah, I mean, Siwoo Kim's interesting. Obviously, he's had some success here. Can kind of pop out of nowhere. The irons, though, it's been a while now. Sanderson Farms, that's the beginning of October, was the last time he really popped with the irons in terms of the strokes gain data. I worry about that a little. He's in a range with Norin. And I do have some, you know, I'll take some stabs with Ricky Fowler. Why not? Guy pops out of nowhere. If the putter cooperates, he'll be just fine. And he did show some form at CJ Cup during the swing season. So this is a pretty good, it's a good tournament range, but I also have a lot of trouble prioritizing because a lot of these guys carry serious risk.
All right. So let me ask you a question. Much of last year, I'm going to step back 2 years, Justin Rose, almost at the top of his game, almost at the top of the world. Right. And he kind of used that strength in his official world golf ranking to get a big deal from Hanma, the club maker. I think you probably remember he decided to basically try and make his own clubs over there, and his world ranking absolutely plummeted, finally plateaued towards the end of last year. But more so what I wanted to ask you is it took a while for his projections, his DFS projections, to catch up with the bad form. We know he's no longer with Honma anymore. He's back to probably TaylorMade, I guess. I didn't stare at his clubs quick long enough when he played in the Hero. But where do we draw the line between projections needing to catch up with new form, which may not be as good as the past, versus where reality is? Jason Day is another perfect example this week. PGA DFS projections, at least on our site, and most of them are what I would say for a golfer 7,300 through the roof. He's ranking out as one of the best values. But is he really as good of a golfer as the projections are showing?
Yeah, so that's one of the hardest things with golf in general, and why our tools are so important. But yeah, it's a balancing act. So the constant debate of good data versus bad data, because I'm going to go the other way, and it's just one tournament. But I talked about this last week with you. Hao Tong Li was not a professional golfer for like a year stretch. He lost the ability to play, and then he found something. And so it seems if you ran long-term data, he would have graded out horrendous last week. But obviously that's bad data seeing what he did. He's clearly found something in his game. On the flip side, you know, if you go back when Jason Day was one of the world's best putters and the best short game player in the world, 7,300 is a joke, and Justin Rose falls in this category too. So I think it's a balancing act. I think I'm willing to hold on a little longer on macro form, but at some point you do have to say, okay. And that's why we try to do some things where it weighs recent form a little more than what a guy did a year ago, because it can change rapidly. And I think Rose is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, take our unofficial world golf rankings that Alex and I put a lot into, and it's shown Russell Henley, based on his statistics in new form, we'll call it newer form, more recent form, is a lot better projecting than what his actual official world golf ranking is, and it continues to show. So we are trying to do stats to kind of sift through those exact type of things, trying to update them so that they may impact the DFS projections as well down the road. So let's talk about Ricky Fowler for a second. I think the bottom is in, but I don't know where the top is. So I have a set of questions for you. Is it top 50 in the world? Is it top 25 in the world? Where does the new Ricky Fowler going forward actually end up?
So he's certainly not what he was. I think the good thing isn't where does he have to be. I think he just needs to be in like the top 50 in the world, because to me, it's consistency that's impacted, not ceiling. Even during his bad stretches, and it's been a while, he's still flirting with the leaderboard in sporadic tournaments. It's just when he's not, he's missing the cut instead of coming in like 37th, which that's the impact. So I feel fine going to Ricky in tournaments. I just don't think you can roster him in like cash indefinitely or safety, because he just doesn't have the made cut equity he once did.
Truthfully, and I don't mean to bring this up because I talk about him a bit, but I really think that their games and how they went are mirror images from Spieth to Fowler. The exact downturn for Spieth, we still saw him come up on the leaderboard, even in a major. I think it was the PGA Championship during the height of Spieth's downturn, still came in fourth or sixth in that event at Bethpage. Fowler similar. Now, you and I both saw Spieth plateau at the bottom at the Farmers last year. Both of us said, whoa, this waste management. He looks completely different than what we're used to. Ended up coming in fourth there and then went on a tear. Do you think that Fowler has that type of potential, or do you think we're past that part in his career?
It seems like we're past that part again.
Yeah, Fowler's older than Spieth too, so that's, you know, it has that element here as well.
I still think, though, that Ricky's got a shot to win big-time events in any time he's there. I just don't think he has a shot to be consistently there. When he's not there, he's not going to be anywhere, and that's the difference. Like, the best players in the world, I've said this for a long time. Honestly, I think their biggest, the reason they're the best players in the world is when they don't have it, they shoot like 71, not 77. And that is such a key aspect. And Ricky doesn't have that. When he doesn't have it, it's over. It's a miscut.
It sure is. Speaking of age, I brought up age. Fellow's a little older than Speed. Our buddy Mike Campbell in chat, he tweeted me last week and he said, "Hey, guess how old Luke List is?" And I said an age and I wasn't even close. So I want to ask you the same question. How old do you think Luke List is? Without looking.
Yeah, no, I'd say 31.
It's the exact age that I said, funny enough. And he's 6 years older than it. He's 37 years old.
Wow, that is shocking.
What? Like, where did that happen? Like, maybe it's because he, you know, late bloomer or whatever. But that's what I saw. That's what he tweeted at me. Funny. Thanks for bringing that up. Now, let's talk about Luke List as a bottom of the 8K play. I feel like List is one of those guys that is perennially overpriced because when they put him down low, his ownership spikes because people love to tap into that ball striking, you know, strokes gained tee to green stat that he's pretty good at. So versus OWGR, he's typically the worst value on the board when just strictly looking at that. Where do you think his actual reasonable price sits?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a field like this, you can justify the mid-range tag. You mentioned it. Depending on what you're looking at and what you're valuing, there's a bucket of guys who are the tee to green darlings. They just can't putt. And at events like this, it can be very difficult. Obviously, I've rostered my fair share. I played Kyle Stanley last week, and he actually was pretty good. But he just...
Part of the GPP winning lineup, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, or one of.
He just can't putt. It's so bad. And that's what I think you have to look at. But I certainly, and we talk about this, some of my builds that are correlated, I will say, okay, I'm willing to get to some of these guys that ball strike the hell out of it, and they can't putt, just in hope I get lucky. I don't want six of them. But a couple of them, a couple of Luke Lists, sure, count me in.
Let me ask you, though, why are we paying 8K for Luke List when, just for example, we have Joseph Bramlett at 6,500? Bramlett has shown us that his ball striking can be the exact same as Luke List. So do we really just want to target the golfers that are, say, under 7,200 with this type of stat so that we're not risking more of our salary than we need to be on guys that literally have no chance on and around the green on most weeks?
Yeah, so I definitely think there's something to that. There's no doubt. The difference really is just going to be lineup construction and guys like List, a little more experienced and I think a little more well-rounded, but the point is taken. Like, there's when you're in weak early fields, to me, the pricing, the difference between like the mid to low eights and the high sixes is like two starts that were good or bad. There's not that much different between these guys. When you get a major, like, you're like, okay, this makes sense. There's huge drop-offs. Here, I think it's pretty, like, if you lined a matchup between List and Bramlett, List would be like minus 150. Like, where would he fall there? It's not like, oh, he's minus 400 against this guy. Absolutely not.
Guys, make sure you like and subscribe to our channel here. You know, Ben and I are doing short form videos all the time. Plus, you can get this on playback. If you are watching on playback, also make sure you leave us comments too. I know that we have a great chat section. If you miss it and you'd like to comment on stuff, do it right below. And Ben and I, we always circle back through, make sure we answer most everybody's questions. And of course, the subscribing portion of it, you'll get notified when our shows do come live or even this one as well. So help us out over there. Couple of other guys in this value section range that we still haven't talked about that I would like to as we move down the board. Johnny Vegas, not much interest to me. The next guy that I want to bring up is Gary Woodland, talking about the great projections and tools we have over here. He grades out as the top, behind Jason Day, the top points projection for under 8K this week. So does Gary Woodland fit in the Cameron Champ and Will Zalatoris bucket for you in the wait-and-see approach, or do we not want to wait on a guy that we inevitably think is going to come back? or maybe you don't think he's going to come back.
Yeah, this is a tricky one. He's kind of, it's not, I'm not comparing him to Ricky in game or anything, but he's had that going on. If you look over his past year, he's got plenty of top 10s and top 20s. The problem is he's missing cuts all over the place. So I actually like targeting him in tournaments. Just going to tone it down a little bit. That's all. I'm worried about the made cut equity. But again, you get three rounds. You can be more aggressive with some of these guys. He scores. His price is good if he's healthy. Gary Woodland makes a lot of sense. He's just not as consistent as he once was.
And find out where Gary ranks for our PGA rankings today as part of our free premium tools that we offer each and every day. NBA player rankings also free. And for that 100K in the NHL, you can get our top stacks for free today. And of course, check out right after us at 2 o'clock, the NHL Strategy Show with Cliffy and Harris before our NBA content kicks over at 3:30 there. So No House Advantage Show followed by Deeper Dive and then Live Before Lock. All of our favorites are on today. Nobody is on vacation that I know about, at least. But I'm sure I'll find out if we are. Okay. Let's talk about some core builds before we talk about some other guys in the 7,000 range, because it's actually going to lead us to talk about them. Core builds that I've started with this week, I already mentioned a little bit, but either Rahm or Cantlay. I don't love pairing them together in, say, my big dollar lineup, because I think I am taking on a little too much risk having to find four golfers basically under 7,000. There are a couple I like, not enough for me to go there. So what I'm doing is I'm going to Matt Wolf and Patrick Reed as numbers 2 and 3 in the Patrick Reed stacks. I can throw in another low 8K guy. I like Siwoo Kim and I like Alex Noren there. If I'm stacking with Matt Wolf, I've got to go down to, say, the mid 7 range. Stop me if you've heard this before, Ben, but I like Doug Kim as that third guy, 7,500 down there. Who would be your pick in that stack, in that core build? Say, Rahm, Wolf, need a guy in that mid-7s. Who's your first click there?
So I think the prudent play is Lucas Glover. Just, he gained 9.5 strokes on the approach. He looked good, solid price. I think the tournament play for me was probably going to be Doug Kim, like you, or HV3, who is someone that at times I felt really confident we were going to get a good run, and we did in the swing season and the end of last year. Again, he's not the best golfer out there, but he's a very solid player in the mid-7s, fan of his. I kind of like that price. We haven't seen him, so it's an unknown, but I think I can buy into that before maybe some of the results come to the charts.
Yeah, would Varner be in consideration for you for, say, a main lineup? And if so, would Munoz right below him be a pivot in, say, some of your GPP lineups, given the upside we know Munoz has?
Yeah, Munoz, elite scorer, can get crazy out in Bermuda at times. I don't think the splits are too important this week because you're bouncing around. We're out in California. It's a little different out there than what he sees in like Florida and stuff.
Yeah, we got overseas.
So like I don't think it's a huge factor, but just little things. I'm not going to get to Munoz in anything significant, maybe in tournaments. HV3, it's possible. If I'm confident in the build and he lands in there, I can live with that. And I'll throw one more out. A guy I honestly almost never play outside of Florida, but Michael Thompson is playing really good golf right now. 75. I could get there in some capacity this week.
What is going on
with
Michael Thompson and his beard? And Tyler, I know I didn't give you enough time to probably source this because Michael Thompson's not like, hey, Michael Thompson beard on Google. Maybe it'll come up now. Mm-mm. If Tyler can get it, amazing work. But this is for a guy that I've never seen with one hair of facial hair. I mean, this guy has a full-on, you know, Jesus-type beard, Ben. It's crazy. Really?
I haven't been paying attention, so.
And he looked great last week. Can that form really continue? I think it probably could.
I mean, he's playing good golf. There's no doubt. So I don't know why it couldn't. He's got experience. He's got everything that you really want, except, you know, Michael Thompson isn't like a super well-known tour player by any stretch, but the guy's got plenty of experience he's got when he gets going. And he came in 5th tier last year. He came in 9th in 2019. So there's a lot to like with this guy. He clearly can play, and he's shown he can get it done here.
One guy that I think you and I are both maybe long-term higher on than what his recent form has been showing us, which recently hasn't been good, is Lanto Griffin. Ben, what do you make of him? And sorry, I have a little crying in the background. My dog somehow snuck into the room.
Oh,
sorry about that. Just as we're talking about Michael Thompson, maybe a good sign there.
Lanto, I have no real problem. His around the green game is really holding him back at times. It's more, all right, HV3, Lucas Glover, Gim. I talked about Munoz, Michael Thompson. Griot's in the range. I don't really like Griot this week. I'm sure I'll have a couple shares just because it's Griot. He's playing terrible, though. I'm not sure I'm going to have room for some of these other guys, and Lanto was probably in that bucket.
Yeah, totally agree there with Lanto. I'd like to see him play good, but I think the price is just a little too steep. Kevin Stroman's name typically gets buzz around this mid-7K range, but he definitely regressed from the form that people loved rostering him at this price last year. So is he in a wait-and-see bucket, or is he just in a fade bucket right now for you?
He's kind of in a fade bucket for me right now. And yeah, he's done some things. Certainly checked some of the boxes, particularly at the other pro-am at Pebble. His irons are just broken right now, and I'm not willing to say, you know what, Kevin, if Kevin Streelman flips it, and he obviously could, I'll lose on those shares if people play him and I don't. But there's too many other guys. I'd rather play KH Lee if I had to choose, honestly.
Yeah, it seems like KH Lee, good time to bring him up. And Taylor Moore, name maybe we should get used to here, are two of the names that have the highest projections under 8K this week in terms of ownership. Obviously, Martin Laird withdrawing, he had projected kind of high at the beginning, but he's gone from the event. Taylor Moore, 3 of 5 made cuts in the fall, all 3 finishes inside the top 25, a winner on the Canadian Tour, a winner on the Korn Ferry Tour. Are you surprised at the ownership first run? Do you think maybe that gets adjusted down, or is maybe there something here with Taylor Moore?
I am surprised just because people usually don't play people that they've never heard of. And the casual person doesn't know who Taylor Moore is, but the recent success, obviously, you know, that looks good. And this guy's obviously a player. If he's popular, there's just no chance that I'll get over it. It'll never happen. I'll just simply pivot to other guys around him. But the other interesting part, he's the same price as Jason Day.
And yeah,
that's a polarizing topic for sure.
Yeah, I'll ask Alex if maybe it was a line item projection where Moore and Day's ownership got switched, or maybe that's how it's actually going to be. Jason Day, 7,300 intrigues me at least a little bit. I'm not going to sit here and try and lie to you. I haven't played Day since he was seen on Buzz Lightyear's Ranger Spin at Disney World, because I had him heavily at the Arnold Palmer, and he was sitting next to me 2 hours later, and I just can't get to rostering him because there's that problem with him. But at 7,300 in a week event, one's got to assume if he's going to make a comeback in his game and reach at least the top 25 in the world again, it's got to start at an event like this. So we know he likes to play slow. Maybe this is an intriguing option. But I think I'd rather play, this sounds, if you had told me 4 years ago I'm going to be making this statement, I'd say you're crazy, because I wouldn't even know who Hayden Buckley was, Ben. But Hayden Buckley seems like a much better play this week than Jason Day, given the recent results.
I mean, he is, given the recent results, and that's where the topic of what we talked about earlier in the show. Long-term, Jason Day would blow him out of the water if you ran data long enough. If you ran it short-term, Hayden Buckley would destroy Jason Day. He's done nothing to show that he's got anything left. So it's just that age-old debate. Is it recent form, or does this guy just not have it, whether that's injury-related or the putter has cooled off to such a degree that he can't carry it? Because his ball striking, you know, even when he was at the height of his powers, I never considered him like a dominant ball striker. He was just the best short game player in the world. I'm going to throw out kind of the Hayden Buckley for me is Troy Merritt. Merritt is just playing good golf. I played him all through the swing season, and he's been great, very consistent. He's made 4 or 5, everything inside the top 30. I'll play Troy Merritt before I play a popular Jason Day, that's for sure.
Yeah, I have absolutely nothing wrong with Troy Merritt. In fact, I just couldn't really come up with much to say, so I was hoping that you did, and you did. A guy that I, or two guys that I will say, same exact price as Day and as Merritt. Let's talk about Patton Kizzire first. Looked solid for a time, most of the time last week, Ben, before it looks like he, I don't know exactly what happened. I didn't go through the shot log, but one can only assume that he just totally gave up after fluffing a chip because he lost almost four strokes around the green in on Saturday's round alone. You don't do that unless you legitimately skull one and you end up with a seven instead of a four. It must have been one or two holes that were absolutely horrid. But in an event like that where you got to get to 20 under to win, it obviously takes you out of it. So Sunday's round was nothing. Do you want to throw that out after the information you just heard and play this guy because he can light it up with the putter? Or is it maybe indicative of his top form not being there?
I think it's probably the latter, but no, Kizzire's the guy. He still has what he has, which is a super good putter, and he has an iron combo with it at times. So off the tee game is never good. He did skull a chip. His shot tracker was
you did
special. Yeah. He had some things going on at one point, but you know, I'm kind of indifferent to it. I don't have a hot take with him.
I mean, he was in the top 10 before that.
He was, and he's a fine player. I mean, mostly in Texas, but at the same time, this guy has shown. I mean, he's clearly a winner on tour, no doubt about that. So I get it. Not my priority, though.
Throwing another guy out there in the risk asset category, we have talked about a few. Gary Woodland's up there. Ricky Fowler's in that bucket. Maybe even Cam Champ or Zalatoris because of where they are. But in terms of just pure risk upside to downside, Patrick Rogers has got to be up there with the best of them right now. We had two top fives, or I think he came in sixth. So two top sixes. And to miscut in the fall swing with a 57th at the RSM. So, Ben, do we play him in our GPP formats instead of, you know, some of the other guys we already mentioned looking for that upside? Or is there just too much risk in and of himself to play him anywhere?
Ownership, you know, the cop-out is if he's moderately to low-owned, definitely. If he's like chalk, I look at the miscut equity and I say, I can get away with not playing him, but you mentioned he flirts with the top fives. The guy can do it. And I believe he's a California kid. There's a lot to like there. So I'm going to let the field dictate not what I do with him, but what it means. You know, if you play 15% of a guy, sometimes that's a fade. Other times that's 3X the field. It all depends on what other people are doing with him. That's how I'll approach it this week.
About 5 to 7 minutes left here, and let's make this the Canadian section of our show. Let's start right up at the top with Adam Hadwin, who had four straight top sixes here at this event, six straight made cuts, got interviewed about how his form, it doesn't matter when he comes here. He just loves it. He feels like it's the start of a new season, plays well. Would you rather play Adam Hadwin or Adam Svensson, whose ball striking and form here is also pretty good? $900 difference that may sway you, but thought I'd throw out the two Canadian Adams to start.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I get, and there's something obviously to Hadwin, but you're paying a pretty lofty tax. He's done not much.
Most of his history, yeah.
You're really just banking on that, and he's shown it can be done. I don't like doing that because, you know, people early in PGA, they look at course history a lot because there's not much to go off of. And Hadwin's going to get a big boost because of that. The price is boosted because of that.
I'd rather play more with Brian Harman, which was not a question I gave you, but Harman did nothing.
I would too. Svensson character. Yeah. I mean,
that's his character.
I don't know much about him. He looked fantastic. If you're going to gain six with the irons and four with the putter, you're going to be pretty dominant. That, so far, it looks like that's an outlier, but maybe it's the start of something. We've seen guys get on runs. Pendrith is right there, another Canadian. So you have options. That's all I'll say. You definitely have options.
Yeah, I'll throw out Denny McCarthy, right? I think he's also Canadian.
Super putter.
I'm almost assured he is. Last week, had to put up a good Friday, very similar to KH Lee to make the cut. Didn't really make that much noise over the weekend, but dude, he shot one over on Thursday, so it's not like he was ever really going to make noise. But of all the guys we mentioned, does Danny McCarthy fit in anywhere for you, or would you rather go down, play Buckley, Svensson, guys that we've already mentioned?
No, McCarthy does fit in. He's got the ability to just single-handedly, even there, like the putting is just so ridiculous. And at the Sony, he lost 1.2 strokes putting. that doesn't seem like a lot for a guy like this. That's the equivalent of losing like five strokes for a normal person. He can't survive without gaining a handful. Previous couple of tournaments, he gained 4 and 5.6. That's what I expect here. And if he does that, I think he's going to be just fine.
He's a guy that can go out and gain 3.5 strokes putting in one round and have it not feel all that, you know, holy crap, he put it so well.
He did that on Friday.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. Did it on Friday. So good call there on McCarthy. All right, a couple of more guys before we get to our long shots and our one and done pick that I want to bring up. Alex Smalley, you and I talked about him last week. He finally missed the cut. Are you playing him again this week, or will you put him in the wait and see bucket?
So
same question for Aaron Rye as well. Same exact question.
Yeah, I think, again, I'll probably maybe pick one of these guys and sprinkle because you can't get all of them. I'm not concerned that Smalley missed the cut. It's just a situation that I thought I X'd out of the platform. That's why I got confused there. I was like, well, I clicked the wrong button, people.
And I'm done.
I was like, wow, I literally just ended the entire show, but I didn't. Miscuts are going to happen. And it wasn't horrendous. He couldn't really putt. He did nothing, really. His irons were a little positive. Everything else was a little negative. I still believe in this guy. I think he's a pretty good player. So I'm on Smalley. Aaron Rye is more unknown. He's shown it in Europe, hasn't shown it here a ton. He got on the run during swing season. He is someone I struggle with evaluation wise.
Irons look pretty good. Gained 1.5 in round one, had one really bad shot in round two, ended up still gaining strokes though. Short game looked horrendous last week. So maybe if you're interested in him, do a little bit more digging about his baseline stats. We don't have any here, but you can go over to Euro and look at the baseline strokes gained putting, strokes gained around the green. You know, I know he was pretty average in those categories over there, but you can certainly dig and see where his downfalls are, because last week it was a bad short game. So I'm sticking with a guy that we think can do it and have the talent, like you mentioned with Smalley. I know he's probably part of the long shots, but it fits in here. Nick Hardy did not get it done for us last week, should have gotten it done. Looked pretty good, made two bad mistakes, and it cost him. So is this an event where we know he can use the elite distance off the tee a little bit more? He's guaranteed three rounds. Are you ready to go back to him? Higher price, though, $6,900.
That's the one thing I don't like. I think he's a fine play and a fine player. Last week he filled out lineups when I was really in a jam. Here, you mentioned guys already. There's guys in the sixes that you can get to that are lower cost than him. So although I think he's a fine player, it's not the same situation where I'm using him simply as salary relief. That doesn't mean I'm not going to play him, though. I still think talent-wise, he's worth it. It's just not the same situation.
All right, let's go with some long shots here before we end up in the one and done. I'm going to give you a list of three names that came in the top 20 or actually a tie for 20 last week. Then I want you to tell me if you're interested in any of them. Chat just brought up Davis Riley. I'll bring up Dylan Wu. And lastly, Kramer Hickok. Three names, long shots. Hickok looked pretty good, gained everywhere. Wu, outstanding iron player throughout his career, but didn't look great elsewhere. And for Davis Riley, really struggled around the green, but looked good elsewhere other than that.
Yeah, these are the type of guys, you know, some of them are going to emerge. Normally, I think for me, it would be Kramer Hickok, who I've played and who I like. I actually am going to go to Davis Riley, though. I don't know a lot about this guy, but from what I've seen, he's got some talent, and I was pretty impressed. His around the green game was horrendous, but he putted well. He really played good off the tee and with the approach. Guy's got some experience. He's got a top 10. I think he can find the weekend, and I wouldn't be that afraid if I got to Davis Riley.
Yeah, Sahith Theegala is another guy that I like to play. Starting to make cuts, get a little more consistency. I like him this week, $6,700. A couple of other long shots before we get to our one and done. Joseph Bramlett, I already brought up. Kevin Tway, two names there. All right, let's go to our one and done because we don't have much time left, Ben, and we like to focus on this. You kind of teased it earlier in the show, and I had written the name down already. So it seems like you and I are both in line. We both like Abraham Ancer this week. And very simply on the strategy front, it's because I think Rahm and Cantlay each win a major this year. So I'm going to save them for a major. I think Rahm wins at St. Andrews. I think Cantlay's got a chance at Brookline. And I think Cantlay's got a chance at the PGA Championship site. I don't think he's ready for Augusta. But I'm saving those two. I think Abraham Answer gives us the best upside outside of there, and hoping people don't click them because of the miscut last week.
So yeah, I think you're right on it. For me, the most likely winners of this tournament are guys I'm not using in one and gun. It's a little too much opportunity cost. I'm going to go to that next tier. I think that Abraham Answer makes a lot of sense. I know you're not going to agree with this. I think that Sungjae Im is all right and that he is going to bounce back here. Not a lot of people are going to go to him because obviously if you played him last week, you can't use him and you're not happy. If you didn't play him, it doesn't seem like a lot of people may. So if you're in a large tournament, you're in the 4,000 person entry, the Pat Mayos, I think that I'm pretty comfortable with that. I think Answer though makes a lot of sense. Is there anyone, like, would you go as low as like Norin and those types? Or you think that's just like unnecessary?
I think if we're going that low, you got to just go right back to Siwoo Kim because
yeah, that's a good point.
Everything else has looked okay besides his iron the last 2 weeks. I know his putter wasn't great, but if we get that spike iron week that you and I talk about from Siwoo, he could be right there trying to defend the championship. So if I'm going that low, I'll go to Siwoo. So it's either Abraham Answer or Siwoo Kim for me. I'll probably split them between the two. I'm in two, one and done's the male, yep. One and one other. I'll split them this week.
I like it. Yeah. Again, it's very early. If your guy got cut, don't worry. It's a long.
Don't not pick a player because you missed one cut. There's a lot of golf tournaments.
You can make it up in a second. So just stay the course. Don't reach. Don't say like, oh, I need to play Rom because I have to catch up. Just stay the course. There's a lot of golf, big time prize pools. And we have an article posted on the site. Obviously the one and done video. And then tomorrow night live before lock, me and Eric Lindquist, we'll be getting to the 6K range, some of the real egregious players. And we can bring up if you guys have any more questions on the one and done front, but a very, very good start to the season. If you were a Decky or Henley backer, we'll try to keep that going.
For sure. Will. And like Ben said, we didn't maybe get to all the 6K guys that we like, but they will on tomorrow night's show. I believe it's at 8 o'clock. So until next week, everybody, the Farmers Insurance will give us the best field that we've seen yet, the biggest DFS prizes. And thank you to our sponsor, Yahoo. Check out their contest this week. I like their site. I like being able to compare all the salaries and all that. So check out Yahoo Fantasy Golf this week as well. So until next week at the Farmers, good luck at the Desert Classic or the American Express. And cheers, everybody.